live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Another wild NFL weekend. Not like the weekend prior, but some pretty interesting things went down. So let me start right there. I've said this before. In fact, I say it pretty much every single week, and I have this NFL season. Nobody knows anything on a week-to-week basis. Nobody. As an example, remember when the Seattle Seahawks were rounding into form, and they looked like that one team that you simply did not want to run into, not now and not in the postseason. That dangerous team. Remember that? Me neither. Seattle just lost to the 49ers. The 49ers have nothing to play for. Well, other than the first pick overall in the draft. And they still slapped the Hawks. Week to week, you never know what you're going to see. Yeah, but then again, the Rams. Now, that's something you can count on. The Rams would get right against the Eagles and back up Nick Foles, right? Wrong. LA has lost two in a row. Jared Goff is struggling. And they could miss out on a bye. They look nothing like the juggernaut that we saw earlier this season. Hell, thanks, Avi. They don't even look like the juggernaut that we saw a few weeks back. But then you got the Cowboys, right? The Cowboys defense saved their season. The offense has finally come to life with Amari Cooper, right? Dallas, 0. Colts, 23. Cowboys get shut out for the first time in 15 years. Yeah, I guess they're not going to the Super Bowl. Hey, Jera, guess Dak, Zeke, and Amari are not the new triplets. Hey, Jera, no, they're not. The Steelers lose to the Raiders last week, but they beat the Patriots this week. A Patriots team that has owned them for years and has now imploded in the fourth quarter 2 weeks in a row. So, the Pats, if they're going to rip another Lombardi, they're going to have to go out on the road. And they've got a losing road record right now. The way they're playing right now, I just don't see it. Now, I did say a few weeks back on the NFL on CBS, the Patriots will be done when they're done. So, I wouldn't panic just yet. But if you're a Pats fan, there are a lot of things trending in the wrong direction. I guess what I'm getting at is this. I can go on and on, but in this jacked up, upside down NFL, where black is white, day is night, where do you turn for reliability? Where do you go for safety? Where do you go for something you can count on? Where do you go for a lock, a sure thing? Is there such a thing in the NFL right now? There is. There absolutely is. You know where you go? You go to Cleveland, to the Cleveland freaking Browns, America's team, because my dudes came through yet again. Cleveland 17, Denver 16. Now, you know me, I've been driving that bandwagon, the Browns bandwagon, all year long. And I'm at the point right now where I don't think we want any more passengers. If you did not get on before Saturday night's primetime game, then we don't want you right now, because these dudes are for real. And if you couldn't see that before, it's too late. Saturday night was not about Broncos head coach Vance Joseph making a completely whack decision with less than 5 minutes left in the game. That's not what this is about. This is about the Browns. The Browns roll into Denver in prime time, and they beat up another team with playoff aspirations, a team that had a mental stranglehold on them previously. Now, I'm not going to say that win erases the drive or the fumble or 11 straight losses to the Broncos, but I'm not going to say that it doesn't erase it. And same with that cool bit of trivia that they had not won in Denver since 1990. You see, those were the old Browns. These Browns were 0-0 in Denver. This is a whole new team with a whole new attitude, and I love these guys, and you should too. This is why I ripped the America's Team moniker from the Cowboys, and I gave it to the Browns. Because unlike the Cowboys, these Browns are a team that we can all rally around. Unlike the Cowboys, these Browns are not getting shut out. You want to know how long ago 1990 was? I'll tell you how long. In fact, I'll let Baker Mayfield tell you how long ago that was. Baker said, quote, 5 years later, I was born. So that was a long time, end quote. Then again, that is the same dude who posted on Instagram right before the game, ride with me, Cleveland. And all of C-Town did. And so should the rest of you. No, he didn't play his best game. He had less than 200 yards passing. He threw a pick, but he also threw a fourth quarter TD that was part of yet another fourth quarter comeback from him. And that's the thing that impresses me most about Mayfield, the fact that he can bounce back. That impressed me a lot more than if this guy had just come out and thrown for 300 yards and three touchdowns. Because anybody can be a quarterback and a leader when it's going well. But a real quarterback, a real leader, a true franchise guy can turn it around when things are not going well. And no matter how many things go wrong for this guy, he always believes he's going to make a play. This guy never rattles, he never blinks, and it's contagious. It's infectious. Nobody has ever turned around anything better than Baker Mayfield has turned around the Browns. So, let's go back in history one more time. Not to 1990, but to February, when Mayfield said at the Combine, quote, "If anybody's going to turn this franchise around, it'd be me," end quote. Hell yes, and he's done it. Ask Von Miller.
Yeah, he was great. He's great. I mean, just like you saw him on TV, you know, he's a fiery guy. You know, he's mad at the refs. He's mad at the refs for a little bit. And some of the stuff that he said to the refs, I was like, geez, this guy right here, man. So it was good to, you know, against Baker and, you know, playing against him. He has incredible talent. He has an incredible team from tight end to receivers to, you know, Nick Chubb played out of his mind, too. He's a horse. I don't think he gets, you know, enough credit over there. And, you know, the defense played lights out as well. So they got a great team, and Browns are on the way up.
See, Vaughn gets it. Vaughn knows what I'm talking about. If you're getting Von Miller to say, geez, this guy right here, you know you're looking at something special. And going back to Vance Joseph for one second. Look, I'm not here for any of you to come through and smash him for trying to kick a field goal down 4 points with less than 5 minutes to go. And I'll tell you why. This is what the Browns do to you. They pressure you. They make you uncomfortable mentally, physically. Then you question yourself, and then you break. Was kicking a field goal on 4th and 1 from the Browns 6 with under 5 minutes to go, down by 4, the smartest move ever? No. But that's what happens. That's what it's like when you face the Browns. They make you do things that ordinarily you wouldn't do or shouldn't do because they're in your head. Cleveland's Jabril Peppers was surprised by the move. Quote, absolutely. Absolutely. But hey, it worked in our favor. We'd been stopping them all day and they didn't want to come away with nothing. End quote. That's the truth. The Browns had been stopping them all day. So Vance Joseph made that decision.
You know, I wanted points there. We had about 4:35 to go in the game. We had one timeout and 2 minute warning. So I trust our defense to get a stop there.
Yeah, well, you were wrong about that, Coach. You were wrong about that because Nick Chubb broke off a 40-yard run on the first play after that field goal. But then again, that's what the Browns do. That's what legends do. Now, all of that is to say, I'm not going to waste my time with hypotheticals. You know, the hypotheticals necessary to figure out if the Browns are going to make the playoffs or not. No, me, I'm going to live as if. The Browns don't care about the odds or their chances or what other teams need to do. They're all about living it as if they're already in it. You know, dress for the job that you want, not the job you have. The job the Browns want is the postseason. I'm not even going to get into the fact that Greg Williams is actually coaching his way into this gig full-time. And if not that, then at least a discussion about that. Or the fact that if they had fired Hugh Jackson sooner, or better yet, not brought him back at all, the Browns probably would already be in the playoffs. What I'm saying is this. Get used to it, America. Get used to it. The Browns are going to go to the playoffs. It's just a matter of when and what they do once they get there. They're America's team, and I could not be any more hyped about them than I am right now. And I'm going to keep banging that drum. I was in early, and now I'm going to be in often. In the NFL, where there is no sure thing, where up is down, and it's all jacked up. The only reliable thing right now, America's team, the Browns, they did it again. Let's go to Buffalo. Rick in Buffalo. Hanging out. What's up, Rick?
Sometimes in life, Jim, if you want to play the part, you got to look and sound the part. And if anyone should know this, it's that theater intern, Mark in Hollywood. Mark sounds like a 9-year-old hopped up on helium and stands all of 5'1". And that's when he's wearing his favorite pumps. yet this tool wants everyone to take him seriously as a trash talker. Sure thing, Mark. Just like playing the role of baby Jesus in your church's Christmas pageant is going to make everyone take you seriously as an actor. It is pretty amazing, though, how a 40-year-old dude can still fit inside a manger. Way to play to your strengths, midget man. And just like I said I would, Jim, I took over the Woodscopes a couple weeks back. Very few people have the game to follow Brad and Corona. I'm one of them. And leave it to the Woodman to follow up one of his greatest scopes by having the lead singer of the Spin Doctors on. Great pull, bud. If it was 1993, the Spin Doctors played a free show in Buffalo last summer, and about 12 people showed up. Kind of like one of your scopes when I'm not on. But I will give you credit for staying in the game, Woody. Unlike that failure Matt in Vancouver, have you guys ever heard of the Belligerent Canadian podcast? Neither has anyone else. Hey, Matt, maybe you can buy some listeners the same way you bought some Twitter followers, you loser. And a quick update, Jim. The Buffalo clone stock's all set for tomorrow night. If his car doesn't break down, Kyle in Green Bay is going to be my wingman. Check my Twitter feed for the details. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and the crew, Jim. And thanks for the vine. I'm out.
Rock him! Let's go to Irvine. Pete in Irvine. Good to have you, Pete. How are you?
Romy, what's going on, brother?
What's up, Pete? How are you? What's up?
Dude, from the bottom of my heart, us SoCal clones, man. So stoked to meet and greet with you yesterday, man. You walked in with so much swagger, but so down to earth, and you had time to meet and greet with everybody. So here it goes. Let me lay it down for the rest of the clones. So you know, I was standing in line sharing jungle stories with lady clones, teenager clones. I mean, everybody was down there. And I look in my right corner of my eye, and there's Fabian. And Fabian grabs my beer out of my hand. And I had just literally met Fabian about 30 minutes prior. He grabs my beer out of hand. I said, dude, that's my beer. He's like, oh, so that's fine. And then I'm like, dude, what? So he throws out $20. He's like, dude, go buy us another round of beers. I'm like, what's going on here? So Fabian was already cut off by noon, like 11:50. So I roll to the bar, get us a couple beers, come back, get Fabian, you know, get his beers. And Fabian was on fire from the time you got there to the time you ended. He followed you out to the parking lot. And once again, man, it was so nice to see you. I've seen you at Del Mar and stuff before, but it meant a lot to us. And we were reliving old stories. And, you know, you just bring sports. You enhance sports in all of our lives. And we really appreciate what you, have done for us for all your years. And you're definitely a Hall of Famer in the radio. And thank you for that. That tour stop in Mission Valley meant a lot to us.
Pete, you got it, my man. So good to hear from you. Thank you very much. You did a great job laying that out. Mark in Chicago. It's good to have you on the show, Mark. What's up? How are you?
Thanks, Rome. Listen, it was amazing to watch the scope from B-Dubs yesterday. Seeing Fabian was a real treat. The dude's raw energy and schnoz formation make Artie Lang look tame. Look, Fabian was a trooper. I mean, he had to spend 3 weeks collecting cans on the side of the 405 to save up enough money to get an Uber ride down there. Such dedication, such love. But he just didn't find enough mellow yellow cans to afford a ride home. Just wondering if you allowed him to ride home with you in your sled and crack open a Heine on the beach with you, or did you ask Alvy to come pick him up in his 16-passenger van that he uses to shuttle the kids around? Speaking of crappy food and service, does Hawk just use Just for Men on his mustache? Dude looks like he's got a black caterpillar posted up on that upper lip. You know, I can't blame him for keeping that thing, though. I mean, his free mustache ride jokes wouldn't work if he got rid of it. Lastly, Rome, let me leave you with this bit of breaking news. I have actual surveillance video of Josh in Detroit's visit to the mall when he claims he told the salesman he'd take everything. His actual words were actually, do you take food stamps, or can I just put that stick of deodorant on layaway? Josh, you're a blue-collar loser. Accept it. Rack me, Romy. I'm out.
Mark in Chicago, checking out the scope. We are joined by Texas Tech head coach Chris Beard. Chris, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, great to be on.
Good to have you on. All right, so Saturday you beat Abilene Christian 82-48 in the final game at Lubbock Municipal Coliseum. Let me start right there. What did that game and that building mean to you personally?
I was awesome, Jim. Like, it's a historic building. Like, it's been around since the 1950s. A couple kind of interesting facts. The first game ever in our old Coliseum, Tex Winter brought his K-State team in. Also, the UTEP National Championship team with Coach Haskins, that's where the regionals played. They beat Kansas before they went on to the Final Four that year. So just an historic building. Equally important, the first time I ever saw Willie Nelson live was at a concert in that building. So it was like mixed emotions for me.
Oh, that's awesome. We're talking to Chris Beard. You know, a few days before the final game, you and your former coach, Gerald Myers, were talking about the building and the memories that you had from that building. You went to his basketball camp back in the day. You won the hot shot competition. I know you wouldn't say that the two of you are peers, but what's it like talking to him now, knowing that you were at his camp back in the day?
Yeah, it's been a great relationship. You know, it's like life always kind of comes full circle. And Coach Myers is somebody I really looked up to as a kid. I was able to go to one basketball camp as a kid. The rules were different in Texas in those days. There was no AAU, and you couldn't go to camps after you'd played high school basketball. So I was in eighth grade, and I'll never forget my parents said, hey, we'll send you to one basketball camp, and that was my first time ever to love it. You know, that hot shot deal was pretty cool, too. Like, so camp is over. We're all sitting there on the floor at the end, and they call my name, and then there was some kind of, like, problem, and they said, hey, you know, your trophy's not ready right now, Chris, but we'll mail it to you. And then they never did, man. It was like before the internet and email and all this stuff, but I wrote a couple hard letters, called the office a few times as a kid, and I just never got my trophy. Now, like 20 years later, you know, Coach Knight hires me to be an assistant out here, but I didn't have the balls to ask Coach Myers about the trophy, you know, because I'm an assistant for Bob Knight. I'm just trying to play my role. But it was always in the back of my mind, like, man, I got to get my trophy. Well, then, you know, God is good. I get this head coaching job a couple years ago, and the very first thing I talked about in the press conference was, Coach Myers, where's my trophy? To give you kind of an idea what kind of guy Gerald Myers is, he actually brings a trophy by the office a couple of days later. So I got my hot shot trophy 30 years later.
Man, that is so good. That is such a great story. I'm really glad that ended like that, Chris. You earned that trophy. Better late than never. All right, so you're coming off a season where you went to the Elite Eight before you lost to the eventual champion, Villanova. I fully understand that you're focused on the present and what's in front of you and the next game, but how big was that last year for you and the program?
Yeah, it was big, and I never like shy away from talking about it. I was so appreciative of last year's seniors that took us on, you know, the ride of a lifetime, but our deal is we don't want that to define our program. You know, and I said that right after the Villanova game last year that we wanted to be back in the fight sooner than later. And here we are a few months later, you know, like scratching the top 10 and having a chance to play a very, very meaningful game in December against Duke in the Garden. But more than anything, last year's season kind of validated what we do. We've asked players to work really hard here and approach the game and do things with unselfishness that some of these guys have never done before. So when you ask guys to do things that they've never done, it's always good to have some success to validate, you know, what you're asking them to do.
We're talking to Chris Beard, Texas Tech head coach. But the fact is, you lost a lot of senior leadership. You lost a lot of talent from that team that moved on. Yet here you are 10-0, and you just keep right on rolling. How do you explain the fact that from the outside, it looks like you have not skipped a beat at all?
Well, you know, the first thing we did after that Villanova loss, when we got back to Lubbock, because we had a team meeting the next day, and I just told the guys, hey, we've got to have better players next year than we have this year. Of course, all the guys kind of look at you, and I said, well, but it could be the same people. You know, we don't need different people. We need different players. So, Jared Culver, you just had a great year as a freshman, but we got to have you a better version of yourself as a sophomore. So, the first thing I think has happened here is our returning players have gotten better. About half our team are guys that contributed on the Elite Eight run last year, so it's not like the cupboard was bare. Then we've recruited well. You know, Lubbock's a great college town. We're in the best conference in basketball, arguably the Big 12. We've got a lot of things to sell here, but I think the combination of our returning players getting better and recruiting at a higher level has allowed us to stay relevant.
We're talking to Chris Beard. All right, so you mentioned Culver. He had 30 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists in that win over Abilene Christian. ACU's head coach, Joe Golding, said that he looked like an NBA coach. They had no answer for him. So how far has he come, Culver, from last year and to how bright is his future going forward?
Yeah, he's legit, Jim. He really is. I'm not one of these coaches that like sugarcoats it. I'll tell it like it is. I mean, he's an NBA player. He's one of the best players in college basketball. We'd be very fortunate, you know, to have him after this year. I'll support whatever he wants to do in that regard. But I think he's really a lottery pick kind of talent. And that's not just his the obvious things that everybody sees, the scoring, the athleticism, the IQ. It's all the intangibles that most people don't know about. He's addicted to the game. He's addicted to getting better. He's in the film room as much as any player I've ever coached. He's got a certain swagger and confidence about him, yet he's also very humble. He's the real deal. He was raised the right way by his family. I would like to think that we've done a pretty good job coaching him, but I don't want to put the pressures of the world on the guy's shoulders, but I also, you know, pride myself in being a truth teller at the core. You know, Jared Culver's an NBA player.
We're talking to Chris Beard. I appreciate that. That's a really strong statement. You know, obviously you have a guy like that and the talent's evident. How badly does he want to be coached? And then how important is it to have a locker room full of guys that want to be coached?
You know, that's who we are. You know, we don't try to be somebody we're not. Kelvin Sampson talked to our team earlier in the year. We scrimmaged Houston. Not sure if I'm supposed to talk about that, but if I'm going to get a violation, might as well get it on the Jim Rome show.
Everybody good man. I got you.
We had a closed-door scrimmage against Houston, and Coach Sampson came in our locker room afterwards and talked, and he's like, guys, look, don't take this the wrong way. You're not Kansas. You're not Kentucky. You're not UCLA. Don't ever lose your chip. Don't ever forget where you come from. Don't ever lose that chip on your shoulder. And our guys have really embraced that. We've got a sign in our locker room that says, don't ever lose your chip. You know, we have great respect for everybody, but we also have a lot of confidence that nobody works harder than we do. But at the core of who we are, we've got guys that want to be coached. We're not easy to play for. We don't disguise that. But guys that love basketball, guys that want to get better, you know, I think do a good job in our program.
Texas Tech head coach Chris Beard joining us. All right, so you're facing number two, Duke, at Madison Square Garden on Thursday night. You've been around the game for quite some time. When you look at their talent, and they've got Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish, when you look at their pure talent, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Scared to death. Just trying to figure out if we're going to be able to score a basket. No, I got a lot of respect for Duke. We're really appreciative that Coach K would play the game. You know, when we got here, we wanted to eventually, you know, win the fight. And to win the fight, you got to get in the fight. You got to play the best teams in the country. So we're very appreciative of Coach scheduling this game. We intend to take advantage of the opportunity and try to play our best game of the season. But I think Duke, you know, the talent is obviously there. The mock drafts have them 1, 2, 3 and all this. But I think just like all the coaches' teams, they're very unselfish. They play together. They defend. The whole world sees the talent. But, you know, I've had a chance to watch every game in preparation, and they're also just really, really well coached, and they play together. Even though they're all young guys, they have a certain chemistry about them that's pretty scary.
Talking to Chris Beard, what about chemistry? I mean, is that something you can coach, or can you only recruit that? And what comes first, chemistry or the wins?
You know, I think both. I think I tell our players all the time, like, it's like in a relationship. If you say, hey, the chemistry is just going to happen naturally, I think that's bull. You know, I don't believe that. I think you want to be in a good relationship, you got to work at it. And I think team chemistry is the same thing. It starts by coach recruiting guys that are unselfish and that want to be on the team or that want to play for Texas Tech and Duke. They don't want to play for what's on the back of the jersey, their individual names. But then you've got to work at it. You know, some of the things we do, our guys spend a lot of time together off the court. We try to eat every meal possible together. We try to get to know each other on a personal level. But I think chemistry is something that doesn't happen naturally. I think you've got to work at it. And obviously Coach K is the best. You know, the TV show he's got going on right now, we've watched every episode, not because we're playing them, but also because we model our program after them in a lot of ways.
Chris, it's amazing, right? I talked to Bobby Hurley last week for my podcast. And Bobby's a guy who's doing great as a coach right now, had success at Buffalo, moved on to Arizona State, doing a great job there. You know, a 40-something guy who knows what it takes, but this is a guy who played for Coach K, and you look at Coach K, Chris, and the way he's still doing it at this high level, 4 decades plus in, when you see that he's still achieving at that level this far into his career, what do you think?
Just nothing but respect. You know, I had a chance to work for Coach Knight, and then Coach K obviously played for Coach Knight, worked for him for 1 year, I think, at Indiana, so I'm not telling you that I'm in the coaching tree. I'm like 3 blocks over in the park on the ground. I'm like a leaf in the corner. I'm not on the tree, but I've seen the tree. So a lot of things that the Duke program does, their culture, the unselfishness, the eye contact, the toughness, the just the DNA in their programs are something we strive for. And I'm not saying we're there yet, but we do work really hard to try to kind of have a program like Duke.
Listen, before you go, I've had a number of coaches on this season who are also fathers, and they're watching their kids get involved in sports. What's it been like for you watching your daughters getting into sports as athletes now?
Jen, thanks for mentioning it, man. So my middle daughter, Ella, she's a sophomore, and she got moved up to the varsity a couple weeks ago. So they actually played a game in Lubbock. They live with their mom about 2 hours away in Abilene, but they played a game in Lubbock. And so I took our whole team, you know. It's one of those deals where I told the guys, hey, this isn't required, but if you don't go, you're not playing in the next game. So they kind of got it.
Right.
But we take like 50 people to this high school girls varsity game the other night, and like brought the house down, man. We're doing like defensive chants. The guys are giving standing ovations. It was so good that the opposing team actually like wanted to get their picture taken with our team after the game. We basically elevated the atmosphere of a girls high school basketball game, but watching my daughter Ella play is awesome, man. It's like I literally get more nervous and more intense in her games than I do ours because, you know, I just wanted to play so well.
Such a good story. Now, what about your other daughter, Margo? You had a pair of legendary socks last year that Margo bought for you. They had neon rings on them, and starting the Big 12 tournament, you did not wash them. How did that start? What happened to the socks at the end of the year? Have you washed them, and do you bring them back, or have they been retired?
No, we're still kicking them, Jim. They're 10-0 right now. We're going to take them to Madison Square Garden. I had to break down and Febreze them the other day. You know, we can't wash them, but I Febreze them. It's my JUCO days, my D2 days. Back in the days where you gave us your room key at the Final Four and we went up to the concierge and ate the prime rib sliders.
That's it.
You told us not to go in your room and shower, and we didn't. We kept our word, but looking back, we probably should have. But, no, the socks are still rolling. Just like every coach, you know, we all have superstitions. Any coach that tells you they don't is lying to you, and I'm not a liar. So we'll just work these socks as long as we can. And I mean, if we play well in the Garden, these socks are going to become legendary.
All right, so quickly, the weekend itself, if it were not weird enough, then it got capped off by last night's game, Philly and the Rams. The Eagles, who were heavy underdogs, like 2-touchdown underdogs, and starting their backup quarterback against a Rams team that was coming back home looking to get right after a rough game in Chicago. And if there was a time for the Rams to get right, it was last night. First off, I mean, no shame in losing to the Bears. After all, they are your NFC North Division champs. Club Dub is for real, and I'll get to them a little bit later on. Their defense is for real. There's no shame in losing to them. Losing to Chicago in Chicago is nothing to be that worried about. But it doesn't mean that the Rams didn't want to come back home and then get right, get back to work against an Eagles team that was barely hanging for a playoff spot and going back to a backup quarterback. They are the defending Super Bowl champs, but they had not looked like it for most of the year until last night because the Eagles had themselves a night and the Rams did not. The Eagles are never more dangerous than when they're underdogs. Ask injured safety, Roddy McLeod. He came out of the tunnel before that game in a ski mask. Normally, injured players are seen and not heard. This guy was seen, heard, and wearing a ski mask. And he set the tone for the entire team and the entire night. But it's not about him. It's about Nick Foles. And a question that I keep asking. How many times is this guy going to save the Eagles? How many times does he need to bail them out before you believe that this guy's legit? All he did was lead them to a Super Bowl and then win the Super Bowl last year. But then he gets a start last night, and everybody is clowning this guy all over again. Best example is this. When the news came down that Carson Wentz was out with a busted back, the line went from 7.5 to 13.5. In other words, Nick Foles was a 2-touchdown underdog again. That guy moved the line himself the wrong way just by showing up. Well, you clown this guy all you want, but do so at your own risk because this dude can play. He's been playing with the practice squad most of the year, but then just shows up and lights the Rams up. One clutch throw after another, time after time. He goes to Alshon Jeffrey, and time after time, in fact, 8 straight times, it worked perfectly. And those 2 TD underdogs won 30-23 in the second biggest gambling line upset of the season. Meanwhile, where does that leave the Rams? They're struggling.
Struggling.
Jared Goff, especially, is now struggling.
Struggling.
The guy who lit the league up for most of the year has not been the same since he torched the Chiefs. In the last 3 weeks, Goff has one TD and seven picks. That is the definition of struggling.
Struggling.
One TD, seven picks, and you may never see a worse one than this.
Goff under center takes a snap. He trips coming away from center. He fumbles. He picks it up, and he puts it back on the deck. Recovered by the Eagles inside the 15 and down to the 12. Goff tripped coming away from center. Lost the handle initially. Picked it up, looking to get rid of it. He put it back down, and it's Corey Graham recovering for the Eagles, who march into the end zone to pose for a picture in celebration.
Rams radio. I mean, it's like Goff was in the locker room watching the Patriots game while getting taped up, and he saw Tom Brady throw that goofy pick and thought, man, I can do that. I can do better than that. Watch this. It's not just the bad picks either. It's bad everything. The Rams offense has been ground to a halt. They're rattled, they're under pressure, and nobody is wearing it worse right now than Jared Goff. This guy's not himself. He's rushed. He looks panicky. His passer rating for the past 3 weeks is 51-3. The only guy who has started an NFL game during that stretch with a passer rating worse than that is Mark Sanchez. You heard me. Jared Goff, who was in the MVP conversation about 5 minutes ago, is now putting up Mark Sanchez numbers. And if that's not bad enough, Todd Gurley is all banged up, which is pretty much the last thing a team that already is dealing with injuries needs, is that guy being badly banged up. But as badly as they played, they still had a chance to get back into that game and rip it in the very end. The defense came up with a stop, forced a punt, and then, well, roll it.
He accepts the snap. He steps forward. He hits it very high. Wobbler coming up is Nelson. He's going to try to take it back. And he doesn't get any place. He fumbles the football. Let's see. He fumbled the football. The Eagles have it.
White shirt.
The Eagles have it. The Eagles have it. It is Trey Sullivan who made the hit.
Eagles radio. I'm telling you, nobody touched him. And the ball just flew out of his hands. But that's the way things have been going for the Rams for the past 2 weeks. And Sean McVay's reaction was priceless. The guy looked like he'd seen a ghost. If you didn't see it live, get ready to see it a lot, because it was the screenshot that launched about a million memes. Everything just drained right out of this guy's face, which is a pretty decent summary of what the last 2 weeks have been like for the Rams. Now, they're not dead. Not by any stretch. I mean, yeah, they're not real good right now. There are concerns right now. They're taxed right now. The NFL will do that, but they're not dead. Not when you've got Sean McVay, not when you've got son of bum, not when you've got all the talent they have. But they better get right in a hurry, because if they don't, they might not only miss out on the bye, they might host a wild card game, and then they have to go to Chicago and New Orleans, both places where they've already lost this season. So I'm not saying that the season's on the brink. I'm not saying they're dead. I'm saying they've got some issues, legitimate issues, and that this is not going the way Rams fan thought it was going to go only 3 weeks ago. This is not the coronation that a lot of Rams fans thought that it would be. They've got concerns now, and I'd love to sit here and say to you, man, it's all good. It's all going to be fine. Everything is going to be just fine, but I can't. I can't say that. Not based on what I've seen the last couple of weeks. Meantime, very quickly, if you're on hold, stay there. I do want to talk about the Pats for 1 minute. Because for years now, anytime the Pats have slipped up, everybody has rushed in to bury them. You know, like, look, see? Belichick has finally lost it. He finally got rid of too many key guys. Tom Brady is finally old. The league has finally caught up to them. And every time somebody races in to bury them, every time that happens, the Pats are able to climb out of the grave and bludgeon the rest of the league with that shovel. I mean, you bury them, and then they go to the Super Bowl. You can set your watch to it. We've seen it time and time and time again. This is why I've been saying all along that the Patriots will be done when Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are done. In other words, you don't get to say when the Patriots are done. The Patriots will say when the Patriots are done. But that does not stop people from looking to smash them. any chance they can, and especially after that meltdown last week against Miami. And it's not going to stop people from looking to embalm them after yesterday's meltdown against the Steelers. You see, because playing the Steelers is supposed to get the Patriots right for a couple of reasons. Number one, they had that weird thing about playing in Miami over the years. And they lost on a fluke play that required a bunch of mistakes earlier in the game for that play to even matter. It's one of those Miami things, though, right? Weird things happen to them in South Beach. I mean, one of those mistakes was Tom Brady actually forgetting the number of timeouts that the Pats had at the end of the first half. So when does that happen? Never. Never. So it was easy to say that was a fluke loss, a freak event that could only happen in a place like Miami, but would never happen again. And definitely not against the Steelers, who had just lost to the Raiders and had not beaten the Patriots in their last five meetings. You know, Hoodie, Brady, the Pats, they've got this like complete and total mental hold on the Steelers. Pittsburgh always finds ways to lose to New England. Sometimes it's cool, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's unique, sometimes they don't even bother getting off the bus. Sometimes they no-show completely. I mean, there's no way New England can lose to Pittsburgh, especially after that embarrassing loss to Miami. Pittsburgh, 17. New England, 10. The franchise that had beaten Tom Brady a total of two times in his whole life just beat him for a third time. And it's not just that the Patriots lost back-to-back games in December for the first time in forever. It's how they lost. Don't recognize these guys at all. 14 penalties. 14. For over 100 yards, five false starts, five straight punts at one point in the game for the first time in 3 years, and they were 0 for 3 in the red zone. And with whatever the hell this was from Tom Brady, Brady of all guys doing this, down four in the fourth quarter, Tom Brady did this.
Now the pressure. Brady heaves it, and is it intercepted? He came down with it, and a feet down for Hayden. Intercepted. Ruling on the field. The feet were down.
Brady under pressure, and he never makes this type of mistake. Throws it down the sideline. Hayden comes off Edelman, and a catch.
Yes.
Whoa!
I mean, Brady. Brady down four in the fourth in the red zone generally is money in the bank. That's when that guy does his best work. Not when he starts arm punting. The freaking hell was that, Tom? The freaking hell was that, Tom?
Trying to throw it away and didn't.
Was that because you were jostled as you let it go? Or?
Yeah, I was just trying to flick it out of bounds. Didn't want to take a sack and just shouldn't happen.
All right, shouldn't happen. But if that was just trying to, quote, flick it out of bounds, that situation might be even worse than we thought because that did not look like a flick and it sure as hell didn't get out of bounds. I mean, how's that possible? Did this guy's arm strength just vanish overnight? And did his brain go with it? Because that's now two straight weeks where this guy's had horrible errors that cost them points. You wonder how rare that is. That's Brady's first red zone pick since 2016. Yeah, but then again, whatever. Because you know how that's going to go. The Pats look like they're about to blow it to the Steelers, and then they drive down and they win it in the end. And sure enough, they drove right back down to the Steelers 11 in the final minute to force overtime and eventually win it. All right, fine. There was a holding on second down. Still does not matter. All that means is Brady's epic TD is going to come from the 21 instead of the 11. But then he threw another incomplete pass. And then another, which meant that when he threw a TD pass on fourth down, it was going to be soul-crushing to the Steelers. He's Tom freaking Brady. They're the Steelers. He's got this.
Right around the first down yardage at the six. Here's Brady down the middle. And it's knocked down. Incomplete. Intended for Edelman.
Wait, what? He didn't find a way to win that game. The Patriots lost to the Steelers in December. Losses in December. Losses to the Steelers. Red zone picks. I mean, these are like plagues of locusts and frogs falling out of the sky. What the hell are we seeing here? This doesn't happen. We never see this. The Patriots don't do this. Let me just say this, though. I'm not backing down. I have said the Pats will be done when Bill and Tom say they're done. I'm not changing from that. I'm not worried about the Pats. But if I was worried about the Pats, I'd be worried about the fact that they've had two back-to-back sloppy games. I'd be worried about the fact that they went 3-5 on the road this season, and they're clearly not the same team away from Foxborough. And the way they're playing right now, they're going to have to go on the road in the postseason. I'd be worried that the Pats receivers cannot get the separation they normally get. I'd be worried that Gronk does not seem like Gronk, either on offense or defense, and that Gronk is starting to look like a shot fighter. I'd be worried about the fact that Tom Brady doesn't look 41, he looks 61. I'd be worried about the Patriots having never reached a Super Bowl without having a playoff bye. But most of all, I'd be worried about this quote from Bill Belichick.
I was proud of our guys that we battled all the way from the first play to the last. In the end, we just came up a little short. They made a few more plays than we did. And, you know, obviously, penalties and a red error are pretty much the difference in the game. So, need to do a better job there. But it's one of those typical tough football game against the Steelers. And as I said, they did a little more than we did tonight.
Who the hell is that guy? Who the hell is that guy? And what'd you do with the real Bill Belichick? Belichick does not talk like that. Belichick was proud of his guys after a loss. Belichick is never proud of his guys after a win. How can he be proud of his guys after a loss? I never heard him talk this way, even after winning a Super Bowl. And now he's proud of his guys for losing at Pittsburgh the way they did. He's proud of their effort. He's proud of the way they battled. What's next? Participation ribbons? Come on, man. Alvin, you can throw that into your spooky mix because that's pretty scary. Hey, but I'm not worried. I'm not worried about the Patriots. But if I was, that quote would concern me. And so would everything else. I mean, this guy's like, what do you want me to say? We got beat. And they made a few more plays. And they did a little more than we did. You think I'm going to kick them in the junk when they're down? They need me to pick them up. Last thing they need me to do right now is punch them in the package. They need me to pick them up. Adrian Phillips is my guest. Adrian, really nice to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you? Thank you for having me on.
Really good to have you on. I'm doing great. So take me back to Thursday night. You go into Kansas City, which is one of the toughest places in that league to play. You do it in prime time. You have to go in there without your top two running backs. That's about as tough a challenge as there is. So what was the team's mindset going into that game?
Our mindset was, no matter what, we have to get it done. You know, coming off the Cincinnati win, it was a short week. That was a tough game for us. We had to really get back on schedule and get our game plan down within 2 days, and we were on the plane by Wednesday. And going out, we realized that, you know, we weren't going to have our top two running backs. And then throughout the game, our number one receiver went down. But, you know, that's just how our team is built. We're going to win no matter what. We're going to fight with the people that we have, and we're always going to bring it.
You know, I was going to say that not only do you lose your top receiver in that game too, but the game could not have gotten off really to a worse start. You're on the road. Phillip Rivers throws an early pick. You're down 14-0. It would have been really easy to panic, maybe even pack it in, get ready for the next week. But you guys did not do that. So what was the mood on the sideline and among the players early in the game when adversity hit?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy how it felt like you blinked and they were already up 14-0. You know, that's how electric their offense is, and their defense ended up making some great plays. But we just got back to the sideline. Everybody talked to each other, just focused on staying together. We knew that it was gonna be 60 minutes of football being played and maybe even longer. But we knew no matter what, you know, just keep fighting and just make sure we stay in tune with our techniques and just play the game and just go out there and ball.
Adrian Phillips joining us. My man, that happens to me all the time, and they pay me to do this. Don't sweat that. All right, so as a team, you held the Chiefs to a season-low 8 possessions, and you forced punts on 4 of them. How did you go about shutting down an offense that has been so explosive and so dominant?
you know, the main thing with our defense is we want to make them drive the length of the field. And there were a couple drives in there that they did a great job doing that. But offenses get a little bit antsy, you know, when they have those 15-play drives, those 12-plus play drives, you know, they kind of want to get off the field. But, you know, offenses are built on explosive plays, especially Kansas City. You know, they like to electrify the stands. They like to just light up the scoreboard. So making them have to drive the field on us, it really slowed the game down for them. And it pretty much got them out of their rhythm. And, you know, like I said, they got up on us early. But once we got back to the sideline and once we started talking and we made our checks and understand what we had to do, it really kind of slowed down for them, and our offense and special teams helped us out a lot, too.
We're talking to Charger Adrian Phillips, and then at the end of the game, Anthony Lynn decides to go for two. Even Phillip Rivers said, I just assumed the point after, we'd go into overtime. So what did you make of that decision? Did it surprise you at all? And then what did you make of how easily they were able to convert it?
So, you know, it was kind of crazy. You know, we got the three and out. We had them backed up. We were down seven. We got the three and out, and the defense was on the sideline. We were watching our offense work. And everybody on the sideline just kind of felt it like, hey, we want to go for two right here. And we didn't know what the offense was thinking. We didn't know what Coach Lynn was thinking. But, you know, everybody on the defensive side was just like, you got to go for two right here. We're here to win. We're not here to play all night. This is a statement game for us. This is to let the whole world know that basically, like, we're in this to win. So once we scored and we made the decision to go for two, then things really kind of turned up a little bit because that was the game right there. You know, if you kick it, yeah, you can go to overtime and who knows what happens. But you're basically saying, hey, I'm all in right now. All bets are in. And how easily we got it, it was amazing. You know, our offense, they made a great play call and they just went out there and executed it. And Mike Williams had an unbelievable game and that was a great cap off for him.
Man, he did. He had an amazing game. I got to know, so what's it like to come back from down on the road to beat that team in that stadium, to win the way you won that game and to walk off 11-3? Man, what's that feel like?
It's an unbelievable feeling. It's one of those feelings that's really kind of hard to describe. We knew that we were going to win no matter what. You know, no matter what the scoreboard said, we always had it in our mind that we were going to win. But just to actually go out there and get it done, it's an unbelievable feeling. You know, it just shows the grit of our team. And it shows that we aren't the same Chargers team in the past. You know, in the past, we've let games like that slip or get out of hand once a team like Kansas City with an explosive offense gets up 14-0. But we knew that we were built for this. We did it before in Pittsburgh. You know, we were down 14 at the half. I think it ended up winning in that crazy environment, and this was another crazy environment. So we just knew that we were battle-tested, and we've done it before, so why not go do it again?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I was going to go there next. Like, it's your fifth year with the team. From the outside, it feels like this team is different than Charger teams before it. So, and you're talking about that, in fact. What changed? What is different? Why is this group different?
You know, I think it's a nice mix between the players and the coaches. You know, in the past, we've had great players. We've had, you know, great coaches. But I don't know if that camaraderie was there like it is right now. Like, everybody on our team loves everybody. You know, the coaches come down and talk to the players 24/7. And it's not always about football. It's not always about X's and O's. They actually want to know, like, how's your life going? How's your life outside of football? And when you have people that genuinely care for you and really want to know about your day, you know, it makes your job a whole lot easier. You know, it's hard to go out there and win football games, but it's a whole lot easier to get the job done when you know the person beside you and the whole staff around you fully believes in you. And I think that's the biggest thing.
Charger safety, Adrian Phillips joining us. I mean, absolutely. You want to play for the guy next to you and on the other side of you. Now, your D coordinator, Gus Bradley, said, quote, he said this about you, quote, he's got a football IQ that is, I compare it to anybody. He's just one of the most elite guys in that area that I have ever been around, end quote. I mean, to put that in proper context, when you look at the guys that he's coached, guys like Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Derek Brooks, and the fact that he does not hand out compliments like that, what's it like for you to hear that you have one of the most elite football IQs that he's ever been around, especially given who he has worked with?
It's an amazing compliment to hear. You know, when they actually told me that he said that, I was just shocked because I really look up to Coach Gush, and I truly believe, like, in everything that he's doing in our facility. He's just a great man, a great coach, like, just a full-out great person. And to hear somebody that you look up to hold you in such high regards like that, it means a lot. It also means that, you know, the work that I've been putting in is being noticed, and, you know, just it's more motivation to keep striving, keep going in that direction, and not slow down.
Listen, before you go, let me ask about the secondary, because you're part of a loaded secondary, but something that's really unique about that secondary is the fact that you've got a few guys there who were undrafted. So what does it take from a mental toughness standpoint to go through something like that, to go undrafted, to go to a camp with a team knowing that you're expendable, and then make it and stick and star in that league? What's that process like?
You know, it's one of the toughest things to do. And I would think in any sport, because, you know, they have their draftees, the guys that they really invested in, and then you have the priority free agents, then you have the guys that they just pick up throughout the year. So being able to train your mind and, like, focus and get all of the distractions out of your way is a tough thing to do, but once you overcome it, it's one of the best feelings in the world, because you feel like you can do anything. You understand that you are expendable, and you feel like every mistake that you make, they're gonna cut you. Like if someone catches a ball on you, or if you bust the coverage, or if you miss a tackle, you feel like you're gonna get cut the next play. So it's one of those things where you just have to really just trust in your abilities and trust that the coaches and the front office people know what they're looking at, and just be comfortable in your own space and go out there and ball.
And then finally, is there kind of like a fraternity or like a brotherhood of guys who went undrafted and then survived? For example, when you see somebody like your teammate Michael Davis, who has followed in your footsteps, do you take him under your wing a little bit because you've been through it before?
You definitely do that. You see the undrafted rookies come in all the time. You want to help them out as much as you can because you've been in that position. You know the stress that they're going through. You know how hard it is for them to, you know, even get a meal sometimes. So you take them under your wing. You teach them everything that you know. You tell them how you handle certain situations and how they should adapt to certain situations, and you just hope that they succeed. You know, at the end of the day, everybody has to pretty much do it on their own, but when you got somebody pulling for you, when you got somebody helping you, got somebody that you can look up to, it makes it a lot more manageable, because they come up to you, they ask you questions, and they want to see how you see certain things and what did you do in this specific situation. So, like, Mike Davis, Jaleel, when I was a rookie, you know, he came and talked to me. He showed me the process. I passed it down to Trevor, and then I passed it down to Mike Davis, and, you know, hopefully Mike passes it down to other rookies that are coming in. So it's a great brotherhood to be a part of. And our DB room, I would put all the money in the world that our DB room is the closest in the league, and we just love each other.
Steve Smith Sr. is my guest. Steve, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. I'm doing great. Listen, the year, man, what a weird and unpredictable year it's been. It was not that long ago, for instance, that the Rams and the Chiefs were so explosive on offense, and now both teams are coming off a loss. The Rams' offense does not look the same, right? So when you look at the league right now overall, who are the teams that impress you the most?
Well, all the teams that have impressed us, the Cowboys, the Bears, the Rams, the Saints, right? Early on, the Jacksonville Jaguars, all those teams have really started to go in a different direction. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they come out and, you know, they're on their 3-4 game loser streak. Then they come out and play pretty good against the New England Patriots team, who is traditionally well prepared. They look well prepared. They just got outplayed. And then also, too, you know, being here in Carolina, they started off hot in the Fumi month of September, October. And now they falter and they're, you know, trying to survive. Miami, look at Miami, what they're doing. So it's a lot of different things going on. And you just have absolutely no idea who is true and who isn't.
That's what I'm saying. Week to week, you have no idea. No idea whatsoever. Steve Smith, Sr., my guest. So, Steve, what about this? Can a team like the Bears, that is so good defensively but not an elite-level team offensively yet, can they win a Super Bowl in today's NFL, or is it going to come down to how explosive your offense is?
I believe they can win, just like anybody else. The Philadelphia Eagles has showed us that based on having a Nick Foles come in and really take over that team for a team that was led by Carson Wentz, what, pretty much 90% of the time. So I think they can, but this is how they're going to have to do it. Everybody looks at Mitch Trubisky and I think undeservingly talk bad about him, because you got to understand Matt Nagy has done some remarkable things. John Fox was a defensive-minded coach who believes in offenses, don't screw it up. I'll leave it to my defense to dominate. And so what Mitch Trubisky is he's almost in his rookie year learning a whole new system. He is very good in the first quarter. He's very good when he is only reading, when he's one read kind of quarterback. That's where he is currently right now as his second year in the league, but his first year with Matt Nagy. So when it's under 2.5 seconds throwing the ball, he's pretty efficient, almost 80%, he's about 75%. But other than that, when he gets off script, when they have to have him read multiple coverages with the responsibility of Matt Nagy's offense, he drops into 63%. He's 15 touchdowns versus 9. But when he's in that one read system, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. I mean, 115 quarterback passer rating. When he's not, he's 89%. So that just shows you he's still trying to figure things out.
Steve Smith Sr. joining us. Steve, there was a video, I don't know if you've seen this, from last night's game, Eagles and Rams, where Marcus Peters left the bench to talk to a fan who appeared to be jawing at him. I don't know if you've seen that video, but when you were playing, you have or you have not?
I have not seen the video.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. Like, when you played, how often were fans screaming at you when you were on the bench?
Oh, I mean, I've been called a ton of names. I was at one time, there was, it's probably mean for me to say, there was a lady who was calling me all kind of names. Nothing racial, she was calling me a midget, she was calling me all this stuff, and she stood up. And this was probably about the third quarter, so it was about three quarters full. I turned around, I looked at her, and I said, "What trimester are you in?" And she quit talking. And she sat down, and I didn't hear from her again.
Wow.
And hence, she was not pregnant.
Wow.
So, you know, sometimes you got to be careful. So, you know, some people are savages like me, and then there are some people that are not like her. So she learned very quickly that there are just some people you pick on. Another instance, there was a video out that I cursed at someone, and this guy kept heckling me. He was in, what was it? It was the New England Patriots. And he said, I said F you to him, which I did not. He goes, "You suck, you suck, you suck." He kept saying that, "You F and suck, you this, you that." So I casually walked up to him, and I told him this. I told him, "If your mom didn't suck, you wouldn't be here today." And walked away, and he went ballistic. So, you know, fans sometimes got to be careful what they wish for.
My man, you are a savage. Steve Smith, Sr. joining us on the program. You know, where do you draw the line? I mean, do they have license? If they buy a ticket, does that give them license to say anything they want, or is there a line?
I mean, sometimes, you know, these guys get alcohol in them, and that's what they do. But for the most part, I'm playing in Carolina, there was a guy in Atlanta for years who heckled me, but it was in good fun. At one point, I mean, I played here 13 years, so at one point, you know, about the seventh year, I'm like, this dude's a ticket season holder. He's a PSO owner. I looked forward to seeing if he was going to be at the game.
Huh.
You know, I actually, hey, Merry Christmas. How's the family? It got to a point where it was respectable, because when you're seeing somebody once a year for 13 years, I mean, after a while, bro, you're running out of material, right? So he was just like, "Man, it's good to see you. I'm back." And I would always say, "Me too." And he would say, "I'm tired of seeing you." And I would say, "I'm tired of seeing you." Right? But it was out of good fun. And here's the cool part. I go through Thursday Night Football when Atlanta played New Orleans. No lie. I see the guy. And he looks at me, and I just looked at him, and it was really cool. So, you know, those are the things, those are the parts of football that you kind of look forward to. You seeing the same people, you know. But then there's other parts where some people believe because they bought a ticket, because they feel wherever they feel that they're going to say, and you got to take it. And I just think there are some fans who get out of line. They have, and that's just part of it. And I'm not sure why they think just because they buy a ticket that they can talk to you any old kind of way. And then you can't say anything in return.
Steve Smith Sr. joining us. I agree. It does not give you license to say or do anything that you want. All right, now what about the Panthers? They've lost five straight going to tonight's game against New Orleans. Where are they at in your mind as a team right now? What do you see when you look at them?
Well, I see a team that, you know, obviously has a quarterback who is very efficient, who's athletic. I mean, talentedly gifted, right? Can put the ball anywhere. But this is a team where you had high hopes for them. Like I said, the full beam up to September, they did a great job, right? Just like a lot of other teams. But things have unraveled for a number of reasons. And it's not necessarily, you know, everybody's talking about the coaching. Coaches don't tackle. They don't throw. They don't catch, right? And so sometimes coaches do get too much credit and also get and don't get enough credit at times, but that's that healthy balance. Baltimore, if you don't win, blame goes everywhere. And it goes and it starts at the top of that as possibly the GM, head coach, and then players and so forth. So you will see if things continue the way they're going, you got to understand a new owner. He's not necessarily – his patience is there, but the way they've lost and the type of teams they've lost to – you kind of get worried for people because even with Tampa Bay, they lost that Tampa Bay game, but they almost lost it the first time at home. So it's not necessarily a surprise if you really look at it under a microscope like I'm required to do watching film every week.
So, Steve, what's it like now? You and I talked about your entire career, and you were always extremely focused on the game and the job, and then you had some things off the field that were interesting to you and you'd pursue when you had that time. But now you're breaking down film, but for a different reason, not to go out there and be a gladiator every Sunday, but to do a different kind of job. What's it like to get in the dark room, break down that film, and do the job you do right now? Is it close to what it used to be, or is it nothing like that?
Well, it's still the same where I'm watching film to find out what, why, how. Right. So the little nuggets that I said about Mr. Trubisky is, you know, finding out what does he do well? Why does he do it well? What doesn't he do well? So I sit there and watch film. Also, too, you know, what's one of the things that's very frustrating as an analyst is when I'm watching every week, like the Cowboys. It took me 4 or 5 weeks to jump on the Cowboys bandwagon. Then I have that foot and mouth disease. At Thursday night when they just beat the brakes off the New Orleans Saints. So I'm right there. I'm eating my humble pie on television. I'm watching it. And then I pick them, and then they go out there and get a goose egg. You never know what's going to happen. You know, just the culture of the league as an analyst is literally week to week. You can be surprised and not know whatever. I mean, look at Cleveland Browns. You know, I know Hugh Jackson. I'm a huge fan of him. I know what he can do. But who would have thought the Cleveland Browns, after letting him go, are ascending, not descending, under Greg Williams?
In Los Angeles, Fabian. Fabian, doggy dog, how you feeling today?
Doggy dog, good morning. I'm feeling awesome, dude. Thanks to everyone. I mean, they made me feel like a star, my man, you know. I don't know what to tell you. The thing of, you know, the Dick Flowers pretty much took me out there, but he had to go to the Rams game, you know, so he took off. But I told him, you know, that not to worry, you know, I would get a ride back one way or another, you know. The problem is that my phone went dead, you know, and I couldn't call anyone, you know. And I, honestly, you know, nowadays, you know, I remember back in the day, I used to remember, like, numbers like that, you know. Now I just depend on the phone and on the names, you know, so I don't know any numbers and stuff, so... Yeah, found a place, keep drinking, and charged my phone, and then finally called my lady up, and she went and picked me up. But I had a, I don't know, you all kinds of fun, man, you know?
So what did your lady say, Fabian, when you called her up and said, you got to come down here and get me? What did she think about that?
Well, she was like, well, do any of the people kind of like live towards this side? I'm like, I'll be honest with you. I don't want to be like bugging people, you know? So just, you know, get in the car and come pick me up, you know? And that's that, you know? And so, you know, she's an awesome woman. So she did, you know, she didn't, you know, no long face, no nothing. She just hoped that I had a good time, and, you know, which I did, you know. And now she's calling me a superstar over here, you know.
Well, Fabian, you had a good time. You had a really good time. Listen, true or false, did they cut you off, or are the clones just saying that?
No. They definitely cut me off, you know. And I was thinking to myself, you know, it's like, damn, they just can't handle the truth, you know.
They just can't handle the truth. What was the truth that they could not handle? What did you want to tell them
handle? Well, you know, they're like, oh, you could just drink, like, I don't have a little limit, but that limit is just too little, you know?
Yo, bro, at one point, did you try to get the microphone, and were you going to start doing your own show? What was that all about?
You know what? I did plan on that. Like, I was trying to get the mic. They just wouldn't let me get it, you know? I was going to get it cracking, man, you know?
You were going to get it cracking. Yeah, because I was boring
That's
everybody,
right.
Man. You should have, dude. You should have. They wouldn't let you get at the mic. They wouldn't let you get at the beer. But other than that, it was awesome. Oh, dude.
Yep.
Fabian, you also, the other thing where you made your mark, you were breaking people's fists with your fist bumps. What was that all about?
Hey, I'll go back to that, man. You guys just can't handle the truth.
All right, my man. I'm glad you made it back. Nice job, Fabian. Rack him. Neep.
Neep.
We just can't handle the truth.
Good night.